So today I have with me Thomas Imlauer. Thomas is also known as the Old Scientist on YouTube. Thomas is an electrical engineer doing work in the area of Tesla technologies. Thank you very much for being with me today.
You're welcome.
Starting off, maybe you can just give us a little background about yourself.
Yes, it seems a bit unusual, but I want to start to give you an idea about me as a person. So I have a technical and scientific background, which was very, very strong influenced by artists, because I did grow up in an artistic family of writers and filmmakers. So I did grow up, let's say, with the elite of artists in Germany and was brought up during that time. And that had quite a strong influence for me actually later on to studies and design and marketing as one of the aspects, as well as applied science and so on. So I did that in Darmstadt, which is close to Frankfurt, which is a very well-known city for architecture or for scientific work. My design was specialized on industrial design. That means that industrial design is the making, the bodywork, or any kind of design you do for any kind of systems you build, from cars over to machines, this kind of design. That was actually accompanied with the work which I did with a family working as an electrician. So there was quite a lot of influence in various directions, but the technical focus was always very, very strong. So whatever discipline I did choose, it was heavy on a technological side. So if I would work in marketing and so on, I was using desktop publishing as the first one in the 70s, in the 80s, when we had Macs there, when we did photography. I used all the latest technologies, later on digital technologies, and so on. And that lead first, at a later stage, did lead on for me going back into the area I came from. So when I was around 20, 21, after I finished school, I was working in the financial industry. And at that time, in the IT section. So at that time, it was not defined IT, it was called operations. So what you learn is you work with mainframe systems, and you learn all about binary and information and how the systems are working together. So after a period of 15, 20 years and working in design, advertising, and so on, I continued working in information technology, which I do until today as a high-level senior manager in one of the largest financial service providers in the world. However, in parallel, in the time I was still studying or in school's time, I was reading all various books, information about technologies, and one of them was Tesla at that time. And Walter Russell. So, and I was very, very heavily influenced by all these ideas and things, but I never realized anything like that until the urge became so strong actually to become practical in that sense. I have to thank actually Eric Dollard and Nordin, I have to say, at that time. So I know Nordin since over 10 years and Eric Dollard since over 15, almost 20 years when he was working. So that was always with me, their work, and kickstarted for me to become working as a practical engineer 4 or 5 years ago.
You know, I've noticed in my analysis of people that work in this area, there's a strong artistic element to their background. Either they're musicians or they're painters or something. There was a creative dynamic to their personality and to their history that seems to either motivate them or underwrite their curiosity in these kinds of topics. So I find that interesting. I find it interesting you mentioned Walter Russell. I only came across his work maybe a few months ago. I read his book and it was really wonderful. I mean, it was not only very philosophical, but in comparing and contrasting it to other theories, the parallels are really quite amazing. And what's even more amazing is that that came to him in a vision, and he really wasn't much of a scientist, technically speaking, before that, if I understand that correctly.
Yeah, you know Tesla and Russell, they were friends.
Yes, I believe in the book there's mention of Tesla writing him a note or a letter. Now, maybe we can talk a little bit about Tesla technology and the foundations of Tesla technology.
That's a good move over, because we are on a subject of Walter Russell. We are about talking about harmonics. We are talking about music. A Tesla or a TMT or Tesla magnifying transmitter is actually defined based on the transmission line performer. That means with the odd and even harmonics as a musical instrument. As a beautiful musical instrument, which can be played to play any kind of music you can imagine. And the music of Bach And that's actually interesting that Eric Dolpert is extremely fond of Bach, German musician, who composed very complicated music, complicated to play, but in composition, actually, you would be able to compare it to the way how a Tesla coil does radiate waves, if you want.
So can you get into a little bit about what these waves are and how they're structured and, again, what makes them unique?
One of my videos, I talked about the Tesla magnifying transmitter. So if you talk about the subject about the coil system, in a nutshell, we have a simple air coil transformer, if you want, where the primary is loosely coupled to the secondary. However, because of the combination and because of the way the coil is constructed, we are not talking about, if I can be technical now, we're not talking about a so-called lumped circuit. We're not talking about LCR circuit. We're not talking about equal current contribution via the coil. We're talking about a transmission line. That means that the length of a line has knots where so-called waves, standing waves exist. And I created a video actually to show this one where you can actually measure them, which is a standard functionality for every radio engineer who wants to test antenna systems to make sure that the coax cable to antenna is without any distortion or without any kind of disruption, that the signal is properly received at the antenna side. So this phenomena is based on transmission line, and that principle has to be applied when we talk about a Tesla coil. So a Tesla coil is, if you move over to longitudinal waves, longitudinal wave is technically, and most people don't seem to grasp that, but I will produce a video at a later stage actually to prove once and for all that the longitudinal wave is actually the wave which is creating everything. The transverse wave is a product of the longitudinal wave. Without the longitudinal wave, there would not be any transverse wave. Example, when you say sound wave is a pressure wave, then you're absolutely correct. It's a directional wave which creates a pressure in front. That means everything which is in a focus point of a sound wave has the highest reception of energy. That means the noise is loudest. However, it's not only in the direction. Here you hear it all around you. So what you hear all around you is a spherical distribution or a transverse distribution of sound, which is not directional, but you still can hear it if you grasp this analysis.
Well, I guess I should ask first, why aren't longitudinal waves postulated in the standard models?
Well, it was considered in the first time at Maxwell's time, but he thought it was a mistake and turned it down. That means his formula did not account for that. Heaviside actually did pick that data up, and he completed his formulas actually to account for that. So today you have formulas actually to calculate them. That is possible. However, very important to note, if you think about the principle, every pressure, everything what is directional, everything what's initiated from point A going to point B is creating a field around it. You can use any kind of object or not object, will have the same kind of principle applied to it. That means you have a directional form, might be a particle, might be a wave. Because of that, if that is distributed within a medium, it creates a transverse radiation to it. And that comes to the subject when we talk about electricity, that we still don't know what electricity is, but we know that electricity is not propagated within a conductor. It is based on a frequency or skin effect, actually almost outside of the conductor, around the conductor.
And what you're talking about here is somewhat in line with what Constantine Meil
yes.
hypothesizes, is that correct?
I know Constantine very well. Constantine and Professor Toto in Germany, I know them both very well, and all their work. Yes, that is absolutely in line with what they're both doing.
And his theory, basic theory, is that transverse waves are just uncurled longitudinal waves,
yes,
correct?
Yes, it is.
Do they gain their superluminosity by basically compressing the medium they travel through, and in a sense
yes.
they almost create a pressure behind themselves?
The longitudinal wave is not based on a transverse wave. So in a transverse wave, you have propagation, just push wave out in a circle. So you're losing energy over the square to the distance. That is not the case with a longitudinal wave. Because if you take a laser, for example, so the laser beam, for example, is so pointed, it is the purest form of a longitudinal wave, if you can imagine. Still, even if it's very pointy, it is still curled up. So it still moves in a spherical version or in a spiral form, if you want, even if the spiral form is very, very small. It still does.
What allows for a longitudinal wave to exist only as a magnetic wave or only as an electric wave?
You have to differentiate that completely. Electrical wave or magnetic wave are a concept of electromagnetic forms. It has nothing to do with a longitudinal wave. A longitudinal wave, as I said, produces these both waveforms, but the longitudinal wave is completely independent of both of them. It does contain both of them as a unified energy form you want. So what we're doing with all our systems, our consumers we require electromagnetic waves, because we are based on a magnetic form, which is a magnetic form. So that is your current. And based on an electrostatic form, which is just the electrical potential, which is your voltage. Both on its own cannot work. They work only together. However, they are initiated by longitudinal pressure waves. In a moment, we are switching a contact of an electric circuit and the current flows. A potential difference is applied. And then, because it runs in a circle or runs in this electrical circuit, because of the way it's propagating through the circuit, it's radiating out, creating these both waveforms, electrical potential and the magnetic fields, E's and the B's we're talking about here.
What allows for them to penetrate Faraday cages?
Electromagnetic waves, for example, are based on wavelengths. So the wavelength is a formula which can be applied. So when you have, I explained it in my videos as well. If you have a frequency, let's say you have kilohertz, so you take 100 kilohertz, if you want to shield 100 kilohertz, you need to have at least a mesh length there of 10 meters. So everything which needs a mesh length in a Faraday cage would then shield 100 kilohertz. However, that is not that simple. If we talk about the so-called near field effect, something else happens in the near field effect, which is so-called a dielectric field. The dielectric is part of the longitudinal field which penetrates every field. So we have the so-called near-far field and the long-far field. That is based on the frequency of the applied current, and that penetrates any field. So that is also very important that a non-Faraday cage cannot shield such waves. Over long distance, longitudinal waves also reduce power, means it loses energy. It can be said at a point it will not penetrate the Faraday cage anymore.
Why do scientists have difficulties in detecting these waves?
No, it's not difficult. Actually, there have been very, very accurate experiments conducted which prove without any doubt that longitudinal waves. The problem is if you use a normal antenna will not radiate longitudinal waves. You have to use spheres to do that. And if you use spheres, you can produce longitudinal waves directional. And I think I have a white paper somewhere, which I put on my website, which was in Germany conducted, where they did prove it via the Earth line and via the spheres outside, and it measures the propagation speed, and it counts the speed, actually, with a high precision meter, chronograph, if you want, and they could measure the time difference between both signals, and they could see that the signal which is transmitted via the spheres is much faster received on the other side compared to the signal transferred via the ground, if you want, or via the antenna.
Now, biological systems, do they also make use of longitudinal waves?
Absolutely. It's even because that comes to this different subject. Every living thing or being in the universe is using for communication, we call it telekinesis, they're losing longitudinal waves because we are all part of the so-called zero-point energy field. Let's say our spirit or our higher body function is part, or our subconscious is part of this field, and we all connect to each other. Because of that, all communication happens instantaneously, no matter where it is in the universe.
Is electrosmog a byproduct of longitudinal wave radiation on account of the inefficiency of our transmitting and receiving devices?
Electrosmog is based on the RFI, or the radio frequency interference from any kind of device. That is technically a shielding problem because every electrical circuit is radiating. And there is a norm existing which allows you only within a specific distance to radiate that much. And actually, there's an organization observing that you're not breaking the rules by doing so. We live with that. We are actually bathing in radio waves, if you want. And there's nothing we can do about it unless you live in an extremely shielded house or on the ground very, very deep. Then you can do something. If that's related to longitudinal wave, cannot be proven at that time.
Okay.
But But it's mainly based on standard radio electromagnetic radiation.
Maybe we can move on to another topic. Maybe we'll dig into a little bit of the aether concept.
Let's start for a subject before, asymmetric and symmetrical systems. So symmetrical system is actually nothing existing. There is no symmetrical system existing in a universe as such. Symmetry is only produced in our mind, in the human mind. However, there is a very deep understanding for beauty, which is leading to the so-called golden mean. When you work in design, the first thing you learn is about the golden ratio and the golden mean. When you draw a picture, when you design anything, when you write a piece of paper, everything is aligned to that kind of subject. And that stands out. Take two pictures. Both have the same information in it. One picture is aligned in a golden ratio fashion and one picture is symmetrical. And ask them people what pictures do they prefer. And they will point all to the asymmetrical picture, which is based on a golden ratio. It is within us that is part of nature. That is how we perceive beautiness, because that is the way nature talks and nature builds. And there's nothing sacred about it. There is no such thing as a sacred geometry. It appears to us that it's sacred. It appears to us that there is wonderful, that is a miracle how it works together. If you look at the building blocks, how they work, if you look at the Fibonacci sequence, which is originated from the golden mean, it all falls into place. So it has no other way to go, yeah? Mathematically and in proportions. You look at your body, you look at the all proportions of your arm, for example, to each other. It's all to the golden mean. It's only a natural case, and I built this case, and I did proof without any doubt that asymmetrical assigned system. I can go much further than applying, for example, the flower of life, which would be then ultimately, and I have a system I want to build with the flower of life in 3D. That would be the ultimate system for applying nature's rules in electrical or energy terms, if you want.
What you're talking about, in a sense, reflects a Pythagorean interpretation of nature, and even Kepler arrived at his formulations based on his belief in the geometries of nature, the underlying harmonics of how nature organizes itself.
Absolutely. I mean, I said it so many times, we only need to open our eyes, walk in a garden, walk in a forest, look around you. Just absorb what you see. If we close our eyes and believe the industrial world we are living in, then we don't see how nature works. And if you want to be successful with any ZPE device, we have to follow nature here. We are part of it, and all our electrical system we're building has to be part of it as well, because they will become part of us. That is very, very important. The zero-point energy device is a living being, actually connecting to the energy field. That would be our subject about ether, and we'll talk in a minute, where this device is tapping into the energy we are also tapping into it as being part of it.
Again, you see, the ether is perhaps the source of what we consider paranormal activity?
No. So ether, well, if you call it paranormal activity, I would call it just normal activity. There is no such thing as paranormal. Paranormal comes only because we describe something as paranormal because we don't understand it. It's not normal. Normal is what our intellect tells us is normal. It is just a construct. It's a moral construct which has no valid. It's not valid at all. If you look at nature, everything is existing and everything is normal the way it exists. Our moral understanding is changing the subject. So if we talk about ether here, we talk about the zero-point energy field, we talk about the quantum fluctuation, we're talking about the energy which is still left when you go to absolute zero Kelvin. And that has been proven via the Casimir effect, which is a very famous experiment where you take two very plain mirror sheets very close to each other in a vacuum, and they attract each other. Because the pressure inside and outside, or in between the walls of the mirror and outside of the wall, is different, and because of that, the pressure is existing. By doing so, it was proven that there is a pressure existing, that there is energy existing even when there's supposed to be no energy left anymore. If we talk about entropy and about less entropy, our understanding was when we go to zero Kelvin, there cannot be any moving particles anymore. But it has been proven that that is not the case. At absolute point zero, that's where the name zero point energy comes from, there is energy we're talking about virtual energy, virtual fields where particles come out into existence and disappear again. The net change should be zero, but it is slightly positive. And that's the reason you see everything around you. Everything in the universe is based because of this principle of the zero point energy field, which created everything. That's a God field, if you want. That's why we're here.
Do you think the zero point field gave rise to a Big Bang or more of a continual creation type of cosmology?
Continual creation. There is no such thing as a Big Bang. There was never a Big Bang. A lot of things about the Big Bang don't add up. Michio Kaku, of course, he is still hanging on that because he's a physicist, but there's so many arguments not accounting for what's going on currently. There's so many misinterpretation of phenomena we are seeing now lately, not with the Hubble, with the new telescopes we have brought out where we can go into the radio frequency range where much more energy is visible, and we see only the visible light currently, yeah, with our eyes, but at radio telescopes we see much more. We see things which we normally would not be able to see, and there's much more energy existing there.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that, and there are just a lot of cosmological issues associated with the Big Bang, including like the horizon problem, you know, where the energy to initiate the Big Bang even came from. So we have a lot of postulates and guesses, but in my opinion, and I think in your opinion and others' opinions, an ether or a zero-point field fluctuation kind of fills in the gaps.
If you want to call it ether, call it ether. I mean, if you want to be technical, I'm technical. I'm very technical and very logical as well. I don't need to mystify things where others try to mystify things. Fair enough. Okay, so that's their choice. I don't mystify things. I see the things how they are, and I make sense of them, and I prove them. And it's not difficult to see. I mean, look at everything you see around you, every material you see around you. How does it exist? How can that exist? How can an atom exist after such a long time? How is it possible that material cannot be destroyed? That material always exists. Did you ever think about that? How is it possible that around an atom, so-called electrons are moving? How can they move? Where's the energy coming from the movement?
And also, why aren't they crashing into the nucleus?
Absolutely. Who's controlling the distance between them? Of course, our universe gives us a hint. Our universe is electrical. You know, that's actually a large group of high-profile physicists at the moment referending on a regular basis talking about the electrical universe. That there's more hints about that the universe is electrical than magnetic.
I do tend to agree with a lot of what the electric universe proponents say. I've done a bit of reading into their theories. I can't say that their postulates in regards to like introns is any better than some things in the standard model, but a lot of what they're saying I completely agree with. And so I'm glad there's a group like that. Can we just talk a little bit about the history of the ether, the zero-point field, why it was replaced by relativity?
Well, say, actually, at that time, they all believed there must be a medium existing because nothing can travel without a medium. So at Einstein's time and before, they all were saying there is an ether which allows the propagation of light, for example, yeah? Because everybody was under the impression if there is no medium, then there cannot be any transmission. So if that would be the case, how can it be that electromagnetic waves can be propagating in the universe where there's no air, where there's no medium at all, and still propagates? So there is the medium existing, and the zero-point energy field can be the medium where you disturb the so-called chaotic or the noise or the random noise field into a structured form. By structuring it, you provide yourself a pathway for any waveforms if you want. But they have to follow specific rules, and that's why they occurred, for example, creating a vortex, if you want.
Harold Aspin, perhaps you could talk about him a little bit?
Harold Aspin was a brilliant physicist living here in London, and he was known for a lot of work he was doing, especially about talking about the liquid crystal ether, where he said it is liquid, but it's also crystal. It is highly dense, and it's so fine that it penetrates any material. But actually, that any material is based off it. He did in the 60s create based on his formulas statistics about the distance between an electron and a proton, and was at that time without high professional computers at that time so precise that he could predict the distance between based on his own theory. However, At later stage, 20 years later, when they had the computer technology, they confirmed that his calculation was accurate. However, being said is that he was never really accepted in a scientific community with the systems. And another controversy is also that he applied for a lot of patents and did admit he never proved that they actually work. And that is a subject which I don't like with a lot of people raising patents about systems they should work and they never have ever a proving system. But just in case someone comes by and get it working, then they can open the hand and say, please pay some royalty for me, you know.
And you've been working with some of his patents, right? On one of your videos, it looked like you were replicating some of his capacitor ideas.
Yeah, so capacitor idea was his one. I didn't work on his fusion or his low electric nuclear reaction systems. He patented as well about the coil system, the two capacitor, three capacitor form, asymmetrical form. But he wrote as well that he's not in position to prove that anymore. So he did raise the patent and asked for something else to confirm that this principle is true.
We've already touched on it a little bit, but again, maybe we can get a little bit more into the harmonic underpinnings of electromagnetics. You know, what harmonics are, what roles they play in electrical engineering.
Now, that's a very, very complex subject. In principle, when we talk about harmonics, talking about resonance. So if you mean resonance, it's divided into different forms of resonance you can produce in a so-called lump circuit. You have so parallel resonance where you have a capacitor coil in parallel, or you can talk about a series lump circuit where you have a capacitor and a coil series connected to each other. They both have their use in radio engineering, and they all work in the space they're supposed to work. However, they're all based on standard transmission line, not transmission line, but transformer rules, and most of them are not used with all air coils. So when we talk about air coils, there are special things who happen, because we are not creating a coupled magnetic field. We are creating dielectric fields, which are also almost absent of current. Special things to happen here, because once a harmonic is achieved, we talk about the Q factor or the quality factor of a coil. That means the highest voltage gain. So what happens or why does voltage gain actually exist? So if you would look at Ohm's law in principle, Ohm's law tells us in a closed circuit, the current and the voltage cannot change. It can change only by changing components within the circuit. You can divide voltage and so on. However, the ratio between the current and voltage cannot be changed. However, if you use Tesla systems, air coil system, or other systems where we resonance materials like ferrite, where we have resonance in the material structure of the crystal structure of this material, we are tapping to this zero-point energy field. Whenever we do that, we harness energy from the field. It's like if you have a wave, if you're in water and you have a wave, and you're riding a wave which comes along, if a second wave will come underneath or a third wave would come from the side, all this wave would add up. But the energy which came initially to the system was the same energy. However, at that moment when they all combined, there is an increase which is higher than all the three waveforms on its own. Only because they are combined to each other, they're tapping into the zero-point energy field and actually taking fluctuation from the quantum field and stealing. So that is my expression, stealing energy from the field and so-called virtual part or the virtual photons, whatever you want to call them. Once they become real, we are creating an electric, and that is the energy we are talking about. That is the energy which is produced by any set of system. It's a crazy model. If it's a moral system, every system is based on the same principle. You resonate to the zero-point energy field by whatever means you think is suited. It can be electric, it can be kinetic, it can be, well, in pressure, in gravity. Whatever you choose can do the job.
Now, the topic of overunity is a little controversial because, again, it seems to violate the laws of thermodynamics. But if we take into account the zero-point field, whether it's finite or infinite, however you want to interpret it, there's a lot more energy there in ambient form, even though it appears chaotic.
Yes. Absolutely.
Take for granted.
Yes, that's very important. First of all, overunity as such does not exist. there is no over-unity existing. What we exist is we exchange energy from one form to the other form. If we talk about a set point energy field, why is the quantum energy there? You have to ask God, you have to ask yourself, we are part of it. That field exists, and that is the reason we have life. That's the reason everything in the universe exists. It created everything. So what we are doing here on this planet, we are taking this energy and we are destroying it. Every energy is produced via the universe, via heat from the sun, which produces all the fossil fuels we have on this planet, which we are burning. Because we are burning, we are creating an equilibrium, and we are left with less energy we had before. Because we are using the stored energy, which comes from zero-point energy field and from the beginning form. So all our systems are based on the systems. They're all a closed system. That means closed means if I have a wire, I connect it to a battery from plus to minus. That's a closed system. This system can never change. This system will have an efficiency which is below 100%. We talk about coefficiency over power, COP of 1, is never realized in the real world with any electrical system we have. However, a COP from over 1 is existing all around us as well. If you take solar energy, it has a COP of over 1. If you take windcraft, it has a COP over 1. If you take water power or gravity power, they all have a coefficient of power over 1. Why? Because we don't need to add energy to create energy. We are harnessing energy which is all around us. So the set point energy field is nothing else. It's just another form that, like solar energy, we are harnessing. There's nothing magical around it. It's just an external energy form. We are capturing it. We are putting it into a system and we are using it. Rather than destroying energy, and all our destroyed energy goes into the ZBE field, we are taking the energy out of ZBE in the field again and putting it back in our environment, if you want. So that's this kind of exchange we need to talk about, that we need to establish this kind of thinking. And there is no such thing as over-unity. Over-unity is a concept which applies only to a closed system. We are not living in a closed system. The universe is an open system. Everything is exchanged to each other. We are connected to each other. There is no such thing as a closed system. That is a construct in human intellect. That is an artificial construct, which is not natural.
So in your view, there's no such thing as a closed system at all, right?
No.
Are you familiar at all with low-energy nuclear reactions, cold fusion?
Yes. Yeah.
In your opinion, does the zero-point field underwrite that process as well, or is that something completely different?
Oh, yes, of course you have. If it goes a chemical way, of course, the atoms can, under certain circumstances, create such kind of energy field as well. However, what happens here is that you then have transformation, and during the transformation, heat exchange. That's a very interesting subject you're just talking about. Fusion energy. I was in the beginning, let's say 40 years ago, I was a believer in fusion energy. But look at how many billions we are putting in. And it's such a waste of money and energy and whatever, building fusion energy, because it doesn't exist. Just to say the sun is a fusion reactor is a pure lie. The sun is not a fusion reactor. It never was. So, looking at the latest development in America, for example, said it shut down the latest project for fusion reactor. And, of course, the scientists are very sad. 70 people lost their job, but at least they saved billions for a cause which could be much better used, giving it to the community for us working on zero-point energy fields, which is much more successful in the long run than spending billions into a system which makes no sense. The Large Hadron Collider is the same subject. It's such a waste to spend so much money to collide particles to each other, what the things are particles, and getting smaller and smaller particles out. Or the other principle is the so-called string theory. All this kind of, I mentioned it before, all this kind of theoretical thinking is completely absurd because it's based on mathematics, and mathematically it makes sense. But the real world, in the real world, it wouldn't stand up because you cannot prove it. Of course, you cannot prove the Max Planck constant either, because it's so low that we will never ever be able to prove that there's existing. However, it did prove to be valid at some point. But it is with all things we are doing. Some kind of formulas or ways we are thinking was existing for a period of time until we found a better way, and then we changed it. Yeah. But the way we are at the moment holding on all the old things, since Tesla lost his battle with his idea to give free energy to the world, yeah, because it's based on profit, it's based on revenue, it's based on wealth. Because if the human mind is still thinking that way, if we don't let go from this kind of thing, if we don't evolve, we will never ever achieve living in harmony with the nature, being able to capture the energy from the nature.
Right. And beyond just pouring our money into scientific programs that seem like dead ends, we put so much into especially military projects that are such a waste. We spend money on planes that represent three nuclear fusion programs. It's really absurd. And the idea that we couldn't cut a program here or there and put it into cold fusion or zero-point energy research or anything like that, it offends logic.
So I'm very close. So I think our last subject is about the projects I'm working on.
Sure.
So I am working together with teams all around the world in many disciplines. Working together with PhDs in physics, in chemics, and I work with high-profile electric engineers together as well. And also with a foundation which has a high reach to highest level of corporates. And because of that, I'm engaged, or I'm part of the board, if you want, to investigate new technologies on the market, if they are valid, if they make sense to support them, if they make sense to produce documents about this kind of projects, to present it actually to the like of Richard Branson or to the King family, something like that. And of course, I looked at Ross's technology. I saw it since the last 2 years already. I'm at the moment a little bit disappointed about how far they went. And when we talk about open source, that he needs to get an NDA signed from all the customers using this technology, that information can never ever be provided to the community. However, what he ever produced so far is only heating a system by putting a lot of energy in the first place and then continue getting a plus of energy out of the system. However, there are a lot of bottlenecks on the system he is using currently. One of them is it's a closed system. It's heated up and it needs matter. It needs a zinc, it needs an alloy and secret ingredients. He didn't unveil what it is. And that needs to be replaced at some point. So you have here a system, a chemical system, which is not independent from any kind of surplus of materials. So from my point of view, it is not that successful. And also the way it's conducted in this container, creating this high heat, is also with problems when you want to exchange this heat into a heat exchange system, where probably this container has to be submerged into water or other form of liquid where it can corrode and so on. So that's, there are a lot of things still not discussed from a manufacturing point of view. So that's quite difficult. So what I'm working at the moment is base foundation work. So what I discuss with all of them is we cannot start working on any subject if we don't have the means to energize our systems. So what I try to work with a Tantratron team together and with my teams and with additional circuitry I'm going to build is that we create a unified system which heats very, very high output, which is very unusual. And we distribute these systems around the world that everybody in the world can use this system for a very low price. And they will be able to replicate exactly what we're doing. The idea is share the knowledge, distribute the knowledge, and provide and create a network of excellence around the world where we can create a movement, not from individuals, but from a large group around the world with the same results. And that should give us a leverage we need actually to convince the establishment to support us.
Yeah, that's a great note to close on. I'm a big proponent of open source, and I really see it as the only way forward in response to the overuse of proprietary systems that we see in the world around us, keeping focus on the bottom line rather than how can we better humanity's situation. So I'm really glad you brought that up. Thomas, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. It's been a real pleasure and an honor speaking with you.
You're welcome. One is all mine.
All right, so take care, and hopefully we can do this
you
again
too.
Sometime.
Yes, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, take care, Thomas. Bye.